This is Bowen Yang.
And Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers.
And Bowen Yang.
JBL wireless earbuds are for those who are the first to try something unique. The first wireless earbuds on the market with a touchscreen case, which allows you to control your audio without reaching for your phone. They also have a touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control. I love being able to touch my buds and control the volume. With a built-in wireless transmitter that lets you plug and play with any device you want, JBL wireless earbuds connects you to all your favorite music, movies, and games. JBL wireless earbuds. Grab a pair at JBL.com.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's, we help you save.
Hello and welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. It is Monday, so we're here with editor-at-large Bill Kristol. Bill, it was good to see you and everybody in person last week in D.C. We all got together.
Hey, what?
Things are bad for the country, but doing pretty good in Bulwark land, you know, which is a tension internally.
It is a problem. It is a problem. We have to be proud of what we're doing and cheerful to see new friends and colleagues and such a nice group of people, honestly. So on the one hand, one's cheerful. On the other hand, one doesn't want to be too cheerful, if you know what I mean.
Woof. Yeah. Well, I returned to New Orleans to some less cheerful updates. And in the meantime, while we were on D.C. last week, the little fella, Greg Bovino, had invaded the city. He did this kind of like frog marching tour around the French Quarter and but has spent most of the time up in Kenner, which is the area out by the airport. Basically, if you've ever flown into New Orleans, you know, it's kind of like not the near suburb, but the next kind of suburb out. And it's a big immigrant community. And yesterday there was a protest out in the kind of parking lot where they'd been staging stuff. And it's just, it's brutal. But I don't know, Bill, what have you been kind of seeing from afar on the immigration stuff? And I'll tell folks about New Orleans.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what it's like on the ground because, yeah, I've seen a few clips and they seem relentless and just going to city after city. They started in cities, I just point out, you know, where I guess there was some plausible local grounds for complaint. Well, there weren't really because they were no one in LA wanted them in and no one in Chicago wanted them in. Right. It's at least conceivable that things are out of control. We need these federal troops in we need more ICE and Border Patrol people. Is that at all been the case in New Orleans? Is anyone?
No.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
They don't even have a rationale. And the only rationale that they have put forth that I've seen for coming to New Orleans beyond just like the fact that the governor asked them to come because little, you know, Bovino and Landry are about the same height, little mini guys. besides that, the only rationale I've seen came actually over the weekend. It was after they'd already started from the vice president who tweeted this TikTok of a guy. It's a white guy in Louisiana in a truck. You know, should the vice president be tweeting out random videos of people that they haven't vetted? Probably not, right? But just let's even take it at face value. It's a guy that does construction down here. He's a contractor talking about how what we've seen the last week with the ICE and CBP coming to New Orleans is that, like, it is true that a lot of Americans are being displaced from jobs because a lot of folks aren't showing up to job sites. And he has had more calls in the last week for work than he has in years, is what he's saying in this thing. And he's like, this, and said, one day I had like 20 calls. And so like, that is, I guess, their rationale, right? Which is changing, right? You know, sometimes it's their violent criminals, sometimes it's their dangerous, it's an emergency. And now, you know, the vice president's saying, well, look, it's these, through mass migration, you know, they're displacing Americans like this gentleman who need work. And I'm like looking at it going, well, the guy doesn't seem to be able to handle all the work that he's getting. They're calling him and he said, I've gotten 20 calls in a day. I don't think he's doing all of those construction projects. I have a friend who's a contractor in town, you know, who's like, they can't finish projects. And like some of the people that aren't showing up actually are citizens, but they are scared or they don't want to be harassed. They have family members that have mixed status, right? Like it's complicated. And a lot of those businesses are run by, are you ready? Americans, Americans, and even Trump voters. A lot of those businesses that aren't getting their, you know, work, but aren't having their employees show up and aren't able to finish the projects at the end of the year where they can get money, you know, ahead of the holidays. So, I mean, like, that is essentially their rationale at this point. It's completely dubious. And even taking it at face value, it's like, well, does that explain them, you know, having masked guys show up to apartments and just start harassing people that don't look American, you know?
Ridiculous. I mean, certainly here in Northern Virginia, it's unequivocally the opposite. The crackdown on immigrants, or even there isn't that much of a crackdown here locally, but the fear of a crackdown on undocumented immigrants. But of course, it spills over to documented immigrants, and it spills over to citizens who don't want to be harassed or who are related, as you say, to others and so forth, is unequivocally made labor scarce and made it harder for contractors, for the bosses, so to speak, to get the people they need to do the jobs they promised to do. I don't even believe, I mean, with all due respect to whoever this guy is on the video, I'm deeply dubious about this. What is the unemployment rate among American citizen construction workers in New Orleans? Plumbers, craftsmen, you know, repairmen, whatever, you know, version you want. I would guess it is close to zero of those who want to work.
I think it's pretty low. I definitely think the demand is higher than the supply on that front for the most part. So anyway, the other thing I got talking to folks there, this is obvious, but it's just worth stating. Yeah, I mean, there are masked guys. They're going out and menacing people just solely based on racial profiling. So thanks to Brett Kavanaugh, you know, for deciding that is legal, because, you know, there's the one video I got, which I put up on my Bulwark Takes feed about this, which people should watch if they want. You can scroll to the end. Is this guy who's Filipino, friend sent it to me, who's getting, you know, getting his asked for ID, you know, getting a papers please treatment in a parking lot. And he's a citizen, and he just starts going off on these guys, like, suck my brown dick, like, show me your papers. Let me see your papers. Show me your face. You know, and so, like, is that what kind of country we want to live in? You know, where people are being harassed, who are citizens, and they're having confrontations in a parking lot. That's what you want. I guess to answer my own rhetorical question, the answer is yes for the administration. And this is the one little item that I wanted to add, which I hadn't had by the time I taped yesterday, which is this image of Bovino texting. Like, one of the activists took a picture of his phone, and he's texting, and he's saying, I can't understand why DHS is hiding us. We're handing them a strategy on a silver platter. We're a massive wrecking crew. The idiots can't do anything to us. This is Bovino texting people, basically saying, I want attention. The DHS should be focusing us and centering us. And that's what this is. When I talked to the activists at that protest, like, that's what they all were like, it's crazy. You know, they'll follow around the ICE guys. And, like, Bovino, who's supposedly in charge, who, like, looks like the little Nazi from Inglourious Basterds, like, jumps out of the black SUV at the end to get himself in front of the camera, you know, as they go and hassle, like, two random people at a Home Depot, right? Like, it's the only rationale for that is, if you look at his text, it's like, these guys just want attention. They want to menace people. They want to harass people. You know, they want people to be scared, and they think that it's a PR win for them. I guess I disagree on the last point, but I think the rest of it's working.
Yeah. I mean, the scaring part is worrisome. Some people will leave, I suppose, self-deport. Others will not show up at work, and that's not good for anyone. And, or worry about sending, having their kids go to school, or picking up their kids at school. Or, I mean, the degree to which they're going after people in sort of vulnerable situations like that is also disgusting. You know, one thing you mentioned just in passing, these masked ICE, or I guess Border Patrol agents, it seems like 3-4 months ago when they were wearing the masks, people like us were complaining and screaming about it, debating it. I think I was on TV with some Trump defender, a show I've not gone on since, actually, because it's so annoying. And, you know, it's, oh, no, they're under great threat, these people. They have to be masked because, you know, otherwise they'll be doxxed or something. Yeah. First of all, the political guys at the top want the publicity. Secondly, of course, no, policemen do not wear masks. It's all ridiculous. And they're not under any threat. At the time, I thought, well, maybe they'll back off that. It's so un-American. It's so creepy, and people really don't like it, I think. And all the gear and the kit and the whole, you know, military aspect of it. Here at Home Depot parking lots. But they haven't backed off that at all. It's just, they're so all in on every aspect of the militarization, the nativism, the bigotry, and they've not backed, you know, they're paying some price politically, I think. I don't know, but they haven't backed off.
I agree with that. Two other thoughts. Just really quick, the other just practical problem, you know, which is why federal agents shouldn't be masked and should be identifying themselves. The other viral video going around from New Orleans was of a young woman. She's like 23 coming up from the grocery store. And she thinks she's been kidnapped. She's like, starts running, right? Because it's like these guys in masks jump out of a car and go after her. And she hasn't done anything. There's no, you know, due process. There's no like, ma'am, like we're here, you know, like none of that. She just starts like running to her house because she thinks she's been kidnapped. I mean, this is, it's East Germany. I guess the one thing I want to say that's positive, and we'll get this a little bit into the gnome too, which I was trying to communicate to a couple people I was talking to out that were protesting, is I do think a lot of folks are beaten down by this for good reason. And I think there's legitimate fear, particularly in certain communities like out in Kenner that are being targeted. But this is not going how these guys want it. Like the pushback to the ICE stuff has been like maybe, and you list in your newsletter this morning, like all of the successful like over the past 2 months, all the ways that the Democrats have successfully pushed back on them. And this is why one thing that wasn't mentioned, because it's been kind of happening gradually. There hasn't really been an inflection point, but like they wanted this to go differently, you know, and they got run out of Chicago. And, you know, now they're down trying to find cities where the local politicians are going to be more welcoming. That there's not been as many as the criminals as they expected. It's not been as easy. You know, they're losing in courts. The El Salvador plan has, you know, been thrown in the trash. And I think that that's at least worth noting.
No, totally. And just two quick footnotes, actually, on the public reaction. It's the public that gets credit for this. They have been very, I'm impressed by this. They're not getting that much encouragement, honestly, from Democratic office holders who remain pretty nervous about this issue. They're certainly not getting the kind of support they should be getting from prominent local business types. I don't know if in New Orleans, the Chamber of Commerce has weighed in or those types. I get that in most cities, not much, right? A little bit. Sure.
There's some exception. I think local politicians have been pretty good. Pritzker was good in Chicago, good. Like our local
but
New Orleans politicians.
The public is organizing itself. You see these people, the whistles and the attempts to just show up and make life difficult for them in a good way difficult, and to also offer support and help for people who are under threat. Someone told me this morning that somewhere else in the country, they did a little Know Your Rights program. And it wasn't just that 400 people who wanted to know their rights showed up to be tutored on what you do and don't have to do when you're accosted by some masked men, but also that the number of volunteers of, you know, people who weren't personally a threat to help teach them, to help be available, to be happy on their speed dial if something starts to happen, you know, has really been impressive. And so I do think it's in a way a civic reaction against what's happening as much as a political one. The other thing is someone said to me, well, Bill, you don't like this, but, you know, Bloomberg, you've praised Bloomberg as mayor, and he did these stops of people that were
stop and frisk.
They stopped people who were black, basically, in black neighborhoods where they thought there was a lot of black crime. But that was bad, and the court actually ended up throwing that out. But whatever that was, it was racially motivated to stop. The police didn't wear masks.
Right.
The police said, you know, sir, we're stopping you. We want to see your ID and so forth and check who you are. Okay, that's bad if it's done racially, I would say.
Sure.
But still, there's still due process. There's still a Fourth Amendment. There's still a policeman who's got a name tag. And there's recourse if something goes wrong. So this is so much worse. I mean, I guess I come back to that. This is so much worse than stuff we have seen in the last 20, 30, 40 years. I mean, it is more like, I guess, the South of 70 years ago or something.
Yeah, for sure. No, I mean, and again, like the Bloomberg, this is not to defend it. I was not a big stop and frisk guy, but like it's a municipal decision. Like it's one thing if like you have a mayor that's like in our city, crime's out of control in certain neighborhoods. We're trying to deal with this. It's not to excuse it, but like that still is a very different prospect than the feds saying we're going to send people into a city over the objections of the local politicians, not coordinate with them. Like the local city councilman I heard from over the weekend, like said that we're not even heard anything. We don't know where they're going. They're not telling us. They're not coordinating with us. This was supposedly an effort to support our law enforcement efforts. You'd think that they'd want to coordinate better with our law enforcement. They're not doing it. On the national politics side of this, our colleague Adrian Castillo had a little scoop over the weekend in his newsletter that said that there's a lot of scuttlebutt among the career types at DHS, that gnome is on the way out. The feeling is that the White House, Stephen Miller, Homan, et cetera, are not happy with gnome and her shadow secretary and maybe a little more than that, Corey Lewandowski. And with a story like this, it's always kind of like, the Trump world is, you know, it's not a traditional HR process over at the Trump world. It's like kind of who knows whether like this is the type of thing that blows over or that, you know, really, you know, she has gotten on the wrong side of, you know, powerful people in the White House and it's inevitable. But I do think that would be a noteworthy move to get rid of Gnome. There's been no sign, like on some of the other issues, which we'll get to, economy, et cetera, we've seen them kind of acknowledge a little bit some political weakness. We haven't seen that at all on this stuff. And I think that'd be interesting if that comes to pass, as Adrian is reporting.
Yeah, and one couldn't help but be cheered up to get back to our original discussion for at least for half a day at her departure. I mean, she's been so repulsive and so many ways. And
doing the pinup shot at CECOT in El Salvador in front of the prisoners. And disgusting. Disgusting.
But, I mean, Steve Miller, I do think they're all in on this policy.
For sure.
Not because of Gnome. She's an effect, not a cause of this policy, or byproduct, or whatever you want to say, cheerleader. And therefore, one shouldn't relax, you know, after the few hours of cheerfulness we're entitled to if she gets dumped.
Someone that's being floated as Youngkin, I just can't imagine that that's going to happen.
No, that would be crazy. Yeah, he would never do that, I think. That's not the image he wants,
if
right?
If he would do it, that would be certainly a sign, and we're going to get to this a little bit. I told Sam last week I'm only allowing myself 15 minutes of 2028 hot stove a week. You know, we don't want to do too much. I might waste a couple minutes at the end. But if he was to even consider that, I think that would be a signal about how he's trying to butch himself up for a potential 2028 run. But anyway, TBD. We'll get to that more at the end. All right, there's a lot of uncertainty out there in the economy. You're probably not getting a $12 billion bailout from the president like the farmers are. And we're just not sure exactly how things are going to turn next year. And so this might be an opportunity to take control of something you can't control with life insurance. For over 40 years, SelectQuote has been one of the most trusted brokers in insurance, helping more than 2 million Americans secure over $700 billion in coverage. Their mission is simple: to find you the right insurance policy for your unique needs. Unlike other one-size-fits-all life insurance companies, SelectQuote's licensed agents work for you in as little as 15 minutes. They'll compare policies from top-rated carriers to find you the best fit for your health and your budget, and they work for you for free. If you've had no medical exam, no problem. They partner with providers offering same-day coverage up to $2 million without needing to visit your doctor. If you have high blood pressure, diabetes, or heart disease, SelectQuote has partners with policies designed for many pre-existing health conditions such as those, so you get the protection you deserve. Get the right life insurance for you for less and save more than 50% at SelectQuote.com/Bulwark. Save more than 50% on term life insurance at SelectQuote.com/Bulwark today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/Bulwark. The farmer bailout is the big news of today. I want to get to this afternoon. The White House is going to unveil a farm aid package, which is going to be $12 billion in assistance for farmers. $11 billion will be one-time payments. So just straight welfare. One-time payments, you know, we're not like, you know, creating a program that will serve farmers in the future. No, we're just going to hand out $11 billion in cash. And Trump is going to announce the package during an event with corn, cotton, soybean, rice, cattle, wheat, and potato farmers at the White House alongside Scott Bessent and Brooke Rollins. These fucking welfare queens have some dignity. Like the farmers showing up to this White House to take yet another welfare check from the president. Like it is hard to imagine like another situation. And they've taken so much money. These guys that doged and have cut programs, have cut healthcare for poor people. I saw there was a viral picture going around of the food bank line in Kentucky, like cutting funding for food banks, you know, obviously cutting USAID, like across the board, vulnerable people are cutting. The farmers, you know, are getting a handout. They're getting their personal EBT cards, which is going to allow them to, you know, live very comfortably in farm country. And they're going to the White House to get their big check from the president. It's crazy to me that this is now the second time this has happened, that Trump has totally screwed over these people who are part of his core base with his stupid tariff policy. And in order to deal with it, all the rest of them are paying to bail him out again.
Right. And of course, we're not helping people with the Obamacare subsidies, which the Democrats, you know, are going to propose an extension of this week. And I guess the Republicans in the Senate and presumably the House are going to vote down, and Trump's not going to do anything to try to help make happen. So, yeah, I mean, farmers are hurting because of Trump's tariffs, and there are individual ones who might be hurting a lot and facing, you know, real danger of bankruptcy or something. A lot of them are, on the other hand, are probably pretty well-off people who you know, I'm not for them being hurt by the tariffs. That's idiotic. But yeah, I mean, it would be worth someone doing a little reporting on who exactly these people at the White House are, what their total income and net worth is compared to the people who work in some small business, have to purchase the Obamacare subsidies on the exchange, and are seeing a 60% hike in the price of that. And they're making, you know, $42,000 a year or something like that. So yeah.
Well, compared to the people in the food bank line, again, it's like your quid pro quo. I mean, it's borderline sex work. I mean, like, you have to show up to the White House to say, Mr. Trump, you're so great, thank you, in order to get money. You would think that people, like the old conservative tradition of appreciating hard work, that you would want to say, hey, you know, I'd rather just do the farming and sell my products to our customers overseas rather than you screwing us with your stupid policy and me having to now come to the White House to beg and compliment you and rub your belly and tell you how beautiful and orange you look in order to get my check. And it's pretty sick stuff.
Will they make them, do you think, actually obsequiously praise Trump as opposed to standing there as props? Will it be like one of the cabinet meetings? You know,
We'll see. Maybe they will just stand there at props with like a piece of wheat in their mouth. That's a stereotypical farmer picture, you know, farmer hat. Anyway, the good news is the Treasury Secretary's got this under control because he understands the business better than any of us do. And he was on the Sunday shows over the weekend. I want to play a little bit of him talking about this.
Margaret, I'm involved in the agriculture industry. I run a soybean farm, and I can tell you.
You own one. You invest in it.
Sorry?
You own or invest in
it. And people in my family go out and work on it.
Oh, yeah.
I actually just divested it this week as part of my ethics agreement, so I'm out of that business, but I probably know more about any Treasury Secretary than agriculture since the 1800s. And I can tell you that what farmers need is certainty.
I'm sure the Bassett kids are out there detasseling, you know, they're walking the rows, they're getting their hands dirty. Why does he keep doing this to himself? It's like masochism. He's going to keep going on and trying to claim that he's a farmer.
So I like the fact that he's divesting because the ethics people told him to 10 months into his tenure, first of all. It seems like when I was in government. When I was in government, it seems to me you sort of had to like, you had a week or two to get, I had almost nothing. So it was like transferring my $8,000 from stocks to a mutual fund. Yeah, so I'm glad that Bessent has taken 10 months to do this, to comply with the ethics rules. But yeah, I'm mostly for leaving people's families alone. But since he raised it, I would actually like some investigative reporting on who in the Bessent family is out there on a soybean farm doing whatever you do. And I'm not going to pretend to have a foggiest idea what you do to a soybean. You know, what's the verb? Do you pick a soybean? Do you you do something to a soybean? I don't know. Anyway,
oh, I'm going
to
get in trouble with my husband. I don't know. Who knows?
Okay. And also, is Bessent the most oleaginous of them all? I mean, he's not the most dangerous or damaging of the cabinet secretaries. I don't think compared to Hegseth or Noam, he's not, you know, doing quite as much damage to the country. But I find his manner so off-putting. Maybe that's just my new social democrat, anti-New York wealthy people mode. But as you say, if he just said, look, I'm defending the policies of the Trump administration, fine. But yes, the need to pretend that he's in touch with the soybean farmers of America is so laughable, you know. Maybe there's one soybean farm out in the Hamptons, do you think? I don't know, near his house out there, you know.
You can't even spit it out. It's like, you're paying people to work the land. I hate to be like this, but I was curious. In addition to fact-checking whether Bessent is actually a soybean farmer and whether his family's working the land and getting up at dawn to, you know, get out there. Also, the claim that he knows more about agriculture than any Secretary of the Treasury since the 1800s, that sounded dubious to me as well. And so I did pull up Wikipedia, our friend at Wikipedia, and we had John Connolly, who was Secretary of the Treasury under Richard Nixon. He was born to a dairy and tenant farmer in Texas. So my guess is that he's actually done a little bit more farm work than Scott Bessent in his Barbie house. That's just me. I'm just guessing that John Connolly probably knew a little bit more than Scott Bessent. Fortunately, I think John Connolly's dead, so we can't have a quiz. But I would like to challenge Scott Bessent to a quiz. You mentioned the healthcare subsidies a minute ago, but also in your newsletter, talking about the opportunities the Democrats have in the next couple of weeks to kind of continue to damage Trump's political standing. This is one of them. On Thursday, the Senate is set to vote on the Democratic proposal to extend the enhanced subsidies for 3 years. Wondering what you think about that and kind of just the other point you're making in the newsletter.
Yeah, I mean, the government shutdown, which the Democrats went along with or caused, you could say, to be honest, they didn't like that term because they were, well, it's the Republicans' fault. They wouldn't extend the subsidies. But, you know, the Democrats could have accepted the Republican CR. They didn't. It was a gamble. It worked out well politically, I think. And they probably worked out pretty well that they ended it when they did, too. And the one thing they got out of it was this commitment to a vote on the Obamacare subsidies. And I think, you know, it's helped them politically. I mean, they did get the health care issue front and center. So they should spend all week screaming and yelling about it and then scream and yell when the Republicans stop people from getting the help they deserve. They could use Trump's farm subsidies, which are necessary because of the tariffs, as an example of, you know, why he won't help actual people who deserve help in this case and have been getting it for 2 or 3 years and with no ill effect that I know of. I mean, they're getting health insurance, which is a good thing. So they should emphasize that. And then I do think the week after, there's quite a lot of economic data that comes out that kind of last full week before Christmas could well show that inflation isn't going down as Trump promised. And so it's not just health costs that are going up. It's a lot of other costs. And for all we know, the economy may be slowing. And I think they have a good 2 week window here to do healthcare and the economy together. And I do think just December is a good time to make some points. You know, I mean, people do have a sort of end of the year attitude. They go on vacation, maybe the week of Christmas itself. They chat with their friends and families and so forth. And well, what do you think that first year of the Trump presidency? Pretty crazy, huh? Pretty good if the Democrats can get people also to say pretty crazy. And also, you know, my people's health insurance is going up and the prices haven't come down. There are a couple other issues they can, Epstein comes up at the end of that second week too. And then there's the drug boats and stuff. So I think it's a pretty good moment for these next 2 weeks. They really should try to bring home the fact that the first year of Trump's presidency has not done what he said it would do on the economy and in other areas.
The enhanced Obamacare healthcare subsidies from the COVID era is like not the way long-term to deal with our healthcare unaffordability crisis, we should just say. But like this, you know, is a bet of their own making, right? Like they came in, said that they were going to deal with costs. That was, you know, what was the Trump priority and what they stated both during the campaign and during the transition. And a lot of people receiving those subsidies are their own voters. And we're in month 11 now, you know, getting to it of the administration. Plenty of time to have come up with an alternative. They haven't. And I really think that they have made this their mess. And I think that it's perfectly fine for the Democrats to rail on it. And not only perfectly fine, they absolutely should rail on it. You know, despite the fact that maybe, you know, if you brought in the healthcare policy wonks, you know, the center, right and left, this might not be the proposed policy. It's just like, okay, well, whatever. The Republicans won everything. It's incumbent upon them to deal with this. They haven't. Their own people are going to suffer. It's going to be something very tangible that people notice. On top of the fact that the tariff news, and we'll see if they back off on that in the next couple of weeks, you're hearing already from a lot of companies that they've, you know, who have been eating some of the additional costs of the tariffs, that they're not going to be able to do that next year if they continue.
No, I like that. I hadn't really quite thought of it the way you just, I think pairing the tariffs and the health care. I mean, he's had plenty of time. I think that's another thing people need to say in the next 2 weeks. Yeah. He's been president for almost a year. The idea that, well, we're going to get around to health. They're thinking hard. A lot of Republican senators are consulting, and they have a couple of ideas and concepts of how they might begin to fix health care. They're cutting out the insurance companies, allegedly, and all nonsense. But I mean, really, it's 11 months. You know what? They met now on tariffs, something he believes in, apparently. They've done a lot. It's been destructive. But it's not like they can't put into practice policies. It's not like they can't propose things to Congress. They got that stupid reconciliation bill through Congress. They could have done stuff. They chose not to do anything on healthcare. They chose to impose tariffs. I think they need to really pair those two in a way. You know?
I agree. They found the time to cut taxes for the richest people.
Right.
They found time to start a war with Venezuela. They found time to end USAID. Like, they could have found time to come up with a plan to deal with people's rising healthcare premiums. They didn't. All right, y'all, at the end of the year, just December always comes quick to me. Like, what is it today? It's December 8th. How is that possible? I haven't bought a single Christmas present yet. I need help. Will some of you guys help me buy a Christmas present? You get to this point, you're at the end of the year, and you start to think all the things you didn't do, you didn't prep for. Well, here's something that can give you a little bit of peace of mind. It's our friends at Trust and Will. Trust and Will turns estate planning from a when I have time task into a quick, straightforward process, ensuring you can protect your family's future today. And just knock that off that checklist. Go to trustandwill.com/bulwark to get 20% off their simple, secure, and expert-backed estate planning services. Going to tell you, went to the site, super easy. Ugh, I'm not a paperwork man, all right? Not good at paperwork. It's going to probably end up being the death of me at some point. I'm going to forget to sign something. You know, I told that story the other week about when I didn't finish my didn't finish all the paperwork for my minor in possession of alcohol and how that ended up causing me problems years later. If you missed that episode, we'll have to save it for later. Anyway, trust and will makes it easy even for non-paperwork men like me. And so, you know, don't let that be the reason you don't check it out. Each trust and will is state-specific, legally valid, and customized to your needs. Add some peace of mind for your future with Trust and Will. Go to trustandwill.com/bulwark for 20% off. That's 20% off at trustandwill.com/bulwark. On the foreign policy side as well, you had Mark Warner, senator from Virginia, on the Sunday bulwark, which you're laboring on every Sunday, and we appreciate, you know, while the rest of us are sleeping in. At the very end, you kind of got into some interesting stuff on the national security strategy that I want to talk to you about. But just before that, he was in the briefing on the bombings in the Caribbean and our double tap strike that killed the two people who had survived the initial strike and were swimming around the Caribbean. And Tom Cotton says that they're trying to roll the boat over and get back on and come attack us again. Warner has seen the video. We talked about this a little bit on Friday. I'm just wondering if from your conversation, anything struck you from what he had observed.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I hadn't really focused on the fact that I think six or seven members of Congress have seen the video, the ranking and chairs of these, of the key committees, intelligence, armed services. But that's it. There are many people in Congress who deserve to see that. I hope, I assume, insist this week that it be shown more, made available to all members. I'd like, you know, Jason Crow and Seth Moulton and a lot of veterans and people who've served in the Navy and others who know quite a lot, special operations, know quite a lot about this, to see this video. And I gather it's pretty shattering. Mark Warner is a very judicious, moderate guy, really values, I say this respectfully, I mean, his reputation as having run the Intelligence Committee in the Senate, and now he's vice chair in a very bipartisan way. He is not a showboat on this stuff. And he genuinely was appalled. I mean, I think both talking a little off the air and then on air about what he saw, and also appalled by the changing stories of the administration. He didn't want to criticize the military directly, but I think he feels like they've been put in just an impossible position and haven't been candid from the beginning, all of them. And I was struck by how alarmed he is by both the particular incident and then by the whole strain of things that's happening, which and how much he is vice chair of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. He's one of this group of eight that's supposed to get all the briefings. They don't know anything. They don't know. They've been given one document, finally, the Office of Legal Counsel opinion justifying, allegedly, these strikes. But all the normal stuff they get, the kind of briefings on what happened, access to documentation, access to the other, incidentally, they should make this video public, but the other videos, they've released 20 seconds of them as a snuff film, but we don't get to see, they don't get to see the whole account of, you know, what happened, who these people are. In this case, it's come out now, only now, that the boat was not heading to the U.S. This boat was heading to maybe meet up with another boat that was going to Suriname to go to Europe, apparently, to deliver cocaine there. So but Trump said definitively, coming to the U.S. the day of the hit, and they never walked that back until a week or two ago. The whole thing has been covered up. I mean, I guess I was struck talking to Mark Warner how much he is one of six, seven, eight people in the United States Congress who in the normal procedure of things would know a lot about what has happened. And he knows, as he was the first to say, he knows very little. And this is not Democratic government. I mean, this is the president of the United States just doing things as he wishes and then not briefing, not telling us about it, the public, but not telling the United States Congress about it.
The other thing that was noted is that this was I didn't really catch this. I thought they all were briefed together. I didn't realize until I watched your interview.
No, there was a sequence, yeah. And there was a scheduling issue, and he happened to be the last one. Right. So he got quite a lot of time with General Kane and Admiral Bradley.
Yeah. In private. To me, that's the other element of this, which is like, it doesn't seem like he feels at all compelled that like we can be certain that we're even killing the people that they say we're killing.
I don't know. They floated so many different excuses. I mean, one excuse over the weekend was, well, everyone who was killed was on a list of people who were okay to be killed. But as Brian Goodman, our friend, works on this stuff full time at NYU Law School, said, what is that? You can't just make up lists of people who deserve to be killed. Where's the list?
Yeah, where's the
what
list?
What are the criteria for putting people on the list? They were obviously in
Iraq. Can Mark Warner see it at least?
Iraq. Yeah. When we were fighting ISIS, let's just say in 2015, 16, in Syria and Iraq, there were lists of people. We went through a lot of trouble to try to make sure they were accurate. I'm sure there were one or two mistakes, but of genuine ISIS operatives who they, special operations forces, then went out and tried to either seize or if need be, kill. That's not a bunch of, you know, mules who are, you know, paid $20 to go take a boat somewhere to bring some cocaine. They were not, first of all, the equivalent of those people were not on the list typically, unless they directly killed Americans or something. Yeah. So saying they're on a list gets you nowhere in terms of international law or American law, incidentally, to justify what had happened.
Yeah. One other interesting thing in your convo, because just like a lot of times I just feel like it's useful when they are making these ridiculous rationalizations to just take what they're saying at face value and like walk through it, like how that would work, right? Because it reveals other absurdities. And like one of those in your conversation was this claim that Cotton said that you know, A, they're trying to turn over the boat, and B, that there's another boat that was coming to pick them up that was also maybe coming to target Americans. And it's like, well, okay, you and Senator Warner were discussing, like, if that's true, wouldn't the right strategic move have been to wait for the boat, right? Like, this is stupid. This is not a war. Like, we shouldn't be bombing people at all. But if you're taking their argument at face value, which is that this is a grave threat to the country, why would you want to kill the two people swimming around in the water? Wouldn't you want to see who's on the boat coming to get them? Wouldn't you want to interdict those people or bomb those? Right? Like, the whole rationale is just stupid.
And you'd want to interdict them. And we do have Coast Guard and Navy ships that can go do that. And someone did it just off the coast of Florida, didn't they? Thursday or Friday, they took a zillion pounds of cocaine or whatever off some ship and captured the people. And you'd want to take the people and then see what information you could get from them. If you were serious about narco terrorists and we need to get up the chain to the really big shots, like the president of Honduras, whom Trump just pardoned. But anyway, right? We did do that a lot with the terrorists. Again, we got into big fights about proper interrogation techniques, God knows. But I mean, it wasn't crazy to think we need to interrogate these people to see what the rest of the organization is up to and who the big shots are. That's what's so infuriating. There's not even a pretense that this is a serious war on terrorism, that this is a serious effort to deal with dangerous narco-terrorists who have this huge organization that we need to penetrate. We know how we try to penetrate terrorist organizations, and we do it sometimes well, sometimes not so well, but this is a shooting gallery. And for shooting gallery for snuff films, I guess I came out of the Warner conversation. He was very sober and he's not, doesn't get as excited as I do, I guess, but it's disgusting, really. We're shooting up these things and putting it up on social media. That's it. There's no serious effort to curb the flow of drugs or to find out what the real relationships within Trinidad-Aragua are or anything like that.
And they've put out all the snuff videos except for the one where they killed the two people apparently swimming around in the water with a boat on fire next to them. Just one other thing on the Warner convo at the very end, and you maybe might have some longer conversations later this week with foreign policy folks on this, but it is interesting. They have this national security strategy that the administration's put out, and it's noteworthy that this administration like barely talks about China at all. Like they've got some like China hawks allegedly, like waltz and such in the administration, but they don't talk about that at all. Like for years we talked about that on the right, it was that Obama and Biden didn't care about this. They were too soft. There's this great threat of China, and we had Cotton, speaking of Cotton, and Gallagher and all these people like, it's crazy, you know, these Democrats are too weak. We need to be tougher on China and decouple. There's nothing like about China in any of this. But there's a significant amount about like whether the Europeans are, you know, cracking down too hard on speech. Like that is the real threat facing the country to our national security. When you kind of put it like that, it is pretty crazy.
Yeah, we have to be tough on Venezuelan speedboats and on European liberals who haven't signed on to our version of the culture war or of white replacement theory or of white, or basically of bigotry, you know, is some of Europe has. They're doing their best to encourage those people in Europe, incidentally, supporting the AFD and all that, but they're annoyed that some of Europe is a little more resistant to this kind of culture war stuff than they wish. So yeah, no, it's not a serious national security strategy, but I think on China, well, it'd be nice if someone who's been sort of Trump acquiescent, because, you know, Bill, I mean, they're not great, but on China, they're really going to be serious. It'd be nice if one of them acknowledged that they've been utterly unserious. And in fact, he's eager to cut deals with Xi, and he's going to sell out Taiwan, and he's letting them have all the advanced AI stuff through whoever it is, the UAE or something, you know, Qatar and all this. So I mean,
and she's running circles around them. She's running circles around them.
Totally. But they're going to be tough here in the Western Hemisphere, Tim. We're going to really be top dog here. And we got the Canadians. We're beating them up. And we're blowing up some fishing boats. And Panama Canal, watch out. I mean, it's pathetic. It's really embarrassing, honestly. We're just a bully. We're just a hemispheric bully. Not even a very good one, probably, honestly. But at this point, I mean, ugh.
And it ties to the farmer bailout. It's like they had this deal and they promised that they're going to buy all the soybeans, but they haven't yet. So in the meantime, we got to bail out the farmers, you know, while she slow rolls us. It's truly pathetic.
Amazon Five Star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by Eva Longoria. Tonight's review, sports briefs. Oh boy, where do I even start with these performance mesh boxer briefs? They keep everything in place, even during intense jumping jacks. These boxer briefs are like a magician's trick. You know the one where you go, where did that rabbit come from? So if you're looking for underwear that not only performs well, but also gives your package the attention it deserves, then look no further. Five stars, Nicolicious. Thank you for listening to Amazon Five Star Theater. There are endless gifts that can make the male friend in your life feel supported and heroic. Gifts that make them feel like they can conquer jumping jacks and perform impromptu magic tricks. And they're all on Amazon. Shop the perfect gift this holiday season on Amazon.
This is Bowen Yang.
And Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers.
And Bowen Yang.
JBL wireless earbuds are for those who are the first to try something unique.
The first wireless earbuds on the market with a touchscreen case, which allows you to control your audio without reaching for your phone. They also have a touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control.
I love being able to touch my buds and control the volume.
With a built-in wireless transmitter that lets you plug and play with any device you want, JBL wireless earbuds connects you to all your favorite music, movies, and games.
The wireless transmitter also allows for JBL superior spatial sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
They've got a next-gen smart charging case for a seamless listening experience. Leave your phone in your pocket. The smart charging case has all the features you need to fully control and customize your listening experience and the earbud settings in multiple languages right from the case.
Use the smart charging case to see what song is playing or who's calling you, or personalize the tactile screen with your favorite photo.
Check the dynamic lock screen to get info on battery life status, time, messages, etc.
JBL wireless earbuds. Grab a pair at jbl.com.
All right, I want to do a little politics talk. We got some Texas Senate news that I'm not too excited about, so I don't know if you're going to cheer me up or not, but Colin Allred has announced this morning that he's dropping out of the Texas Senate race. That seems to be a prelude to Jasmine Crockett getting in. I expect potentially by the time this podcast is out, all signs seem that she is going to get into this race. Terry Virts, who was the astronaut, had also dropped out of the Senate race in favor of running for the House. He's more of a moderate type candidate. James Tallarico is still in. And so it's kind of looking like this will turn into a Tallarico versus Crockett primary. I guess I'll just give my opinion first, Bill, and then you can kind of give yours. But like, I feel like Colin Allred got a real short shrift down there, and he ran really far ahead of Kamala Harris last time, and he got crushed, but he ran above the top of the ticket. And if you project that out to a midterm, let's say that Trump's popularity in Texas is at like 46 instead of wherever it was last time in the mid 50s. You know, somebody like Colin Allred, somebody that runs a, you know, safe, small C conservative race that's appealing, you know, across the board, former football player. Maybe that's the right thing to do, right? In Texas. I don't know. Maybe he can get out of primary. I'm not sure. But the idea that he's getting pushed out of the race because he doesn't have like this social media juice of Crockett or Tallarico, I think just seems like a big mistake. And I think that the Democrats, like in some ways, are like learning some wrong lessons from Trump and being like, oh, we need people that are more like Trump. And it's like maybe true, actually, in 28. I think I'd have a different view of a presidential race. Like maybe there's some view that like controlling the narrative and having a really dynamic candidate is like the most important thing in a presidential race. Maybe it's really important in certain governor's races, or like maybe there are other certain examples. Like in red state Senate races, I don't know that, like, having a fire, an anti-Trump firebrand that is going to increase the partisan variance, like in the hopes that it turns juices turnout. Again, maybe it'll work. I'm not like a total 0% on it, but I don't know that it's a smart idea for the Democrats to be kind of circling the wagons around like very partisan social media firebrands in red states. I don't know that there's a ton of evidence that that's a model for success.
Yeah, I think especially in red states. I mean, I talked to someone from Tennessee over the weekend who said he thought, I mean, presumably a more moderate candidate in Tennessee 7 would have lost also, probably. It just is R plus 22 district. But he did think the Democrats lost 3-4 points because she was just such a left-wing candidate. I mean, and now the wave is still strong enough to get her from minus 22 to minus 9, so that's not nothing. But again, that's exactly the margin of difference in a place like Texas where you could be winning as opposed to getting to 46-47%. And so I do think it matters what kind of candidates you have, especially in these purple and red states. I mean, there was a huge wave here in Virginia, but I think, which is purplish, you know, but I think Spanberger won by more because she was, you know, ex-CIA and a moderate. So I was texting with Michael Wood, our friend, occasional Bulwark contributor, veteran, small business owner in the Dallas suburbs, and telling him he needs to rethink this thing. Tallarico, I don't know quite, he's not quite left-wing, I wouldn't say, but he is kind of young and a social media-ish, and maybe someone who owns a business and served very admirably in the military, wounded pretty seriously, and came back to Texas and then has done well and has someone who would look, is more of a moderate Democrat. So we should use this podcast to get Michael, to make Michael Wood's life miserable now for the next 3 weeks. So he'll have to answer a lot of questions about why, whether he's running or not. I don't think he's sort of just decided not to. He's busy with his family and his life. But nonetheless, I got a little depressed when I saw that, I don't know, that Allred felt he couldn't make it. Maybe it was just a personal decision. I don't know. He didn't want to do it again, but.
I'm talking about being smart, right? Like having a candidate like Crockett in a certain race might make total sense. I think if Democrats in blue states decide that the base is depressed and they don't want candidates like Ed Markey representing blue states, they want people that are younger and more dynamic and maybe more lefty. Okay, it's a big country, right? And Democrats should be able to run different types of candidates in different places. And so I'm for that. Totally. I just like, you know, look at the Texas Senate race, and I feel like sometimes Democrats, like, they take the lesson from Trump, and they're like, we need to be more, turn out the base, look how well Trump's done it. But look how poorly that works for Republicans in the midterms, right? Like, the Trump success in two elections has, like, really papered over Republicans' failures in a lot of these midterm races, and not to, I don't want to compare Jasmine Crockett to, like, Herschel Walker or Carrie Lake or whatever. Obviously, they're liars and gross people. But, like, Republicans have blown a lot of races that they could have run by running Trumpy, firebrandy, two-partisan-type candidates at the Senate level. And Democrats should learn from that just as much as they learn from the way Trump has succeeded at the presidential level.
Just to make this point even more real time, in 2024, Alyssa Slotkin won in Michigan, a state that Trump carried, and she would not have if she were a more left-wing Democratic nominee, in my opinion. And David McCormick, your close friend there in Pennsylvania, won the Republican won in Pennsylvania because though he pretended to be Trumpy and was Trumpy in the primary and so forth, there were enough voters who were sort of reassured that deep down he's not crazy and he's not really like Herschel Walker, which he isn't, I guess, as a business guy and all this, that he managed to squeak through in Pennsylvania. So we have quite a lot of evidence that at the level of Senate races and purple states, either way for the Democrats and the Republicans, or reddish districts and states for the Democrats, the kind of candidate matters. But I'm also not, I got beat up by so many people for saying I was kind of okay with Mamdani back in October. It's New York, sure. You know, whatever.
Right. Well, and I also have said this a million times. I'll say it again right now. If the left part of the party wants to go into a red state and say, hey, what we're going to try to do is run somebody on a Bernie-ish economic platform, but right, who's more center on social issues, that's at least a theory of the case, okay? Like, that's at least something. I don't know that that's going to work, but why not try it? I'm on board for trying new shit. We got to figure out how Democrats can win in red states, or like, so Ken Paxton is not a U.S. senator. That's not what Jasmine Crockett is. Like, Jasmine Crockett is a just down-the-line progressive left firebrand. Like, that's what she is. I mean, maybe Donald Trump will fuck up the economy so bad and Donald Trump will faceplant so bad that she'll win by accident That happens. People win by accident all the time. Katie Hobbs won by accident in Arizona because Carrie Lake was such a terrible candidate. It wasn't because she ran a great race. God love her. So that can happen sometimes. But anyway.
Amazon Five Star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by Eva Longoria. Tonight's review, Sports Briefs. Oh boy, where do I even start with these performance mesh boxer briefs? They keep everything in place, even during intense jumping jacks. These boxer briefs are like a magician's trick. You know the one where you go, where did that rabbit come from? So if you're looking for underwear that not only performs well, but also gives your package the attention it deserves, then look no further. Five stars, Nicolicious. Thank you for listening to Amazon Five Star Theater. There are endless gifts that can make the male friend in your life feel supported and heroic. Gifts that make them feel like they can conquer jumping jacks and perform impromptu magic tricks. And they're all on Amazon. Shop the perfect gift this holiday season on Amazon.
This is Bowen Yang.
And Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers.
And Bowen Yang.
JBL wireless earbuds are for those who are the first to try something unique.
The first wireless earbuds on the market with a touchscreen case, which allows you to control your audio without reaching for your phone. They also have a touchscreen smart charging case for one-touch control.
I love being able to touch my buds and control the volume.
With a built-in wireless transmitter that lets you plug and play with any device you want, JBL wireless earbuds connects you to all your favorite music, movies, and games.
The wireless transmitter also allows for JBL superior spatial sound that takes any audio and turns it into a 360 immersive experience.
They've got a next-gen smart charging case for a seamless listening experience. Leave your phone in your pocket. The smart charging case has all the features you need to fully control and customize your listening experience and the earbud settings in multiple languages right from the case.
Use the smart charging case to see what song is playing or who's calling you, or personalize the tactile screen with your favorite photo.
Check the dynamic lock screen to get info on battery life status, time, messages, etc.
JBL wireless earbuds. Grab a pair at jbl.com.
I want to do some politics on the other side with the Republicans. My final section here, I have my headline is, do we have to hand it to them? And it's Marjorie Taylor Greene and Ted Cruz. Marjorie Taylor Greene was on 60 Minutes last night. Do we have to hand it to Marjorie Taylor Greene? Here she is going after Trump for now being the establishment.
Are you saying that the president now is siding with those establishment powerful people and against MAGA?
He passed a crypto bill that helped out all the crypto donors. He has served Israel's interest, even attacking Iran. He has served Big Pharma. He didn't take away the COVID vaccines that we want to see taken away. So those are the areas that are still getting everything they want, while the people, we're still out here saying we want to see action on areas for the American people, not for the major industries and the big donors.
Bill.
I'm a little cross-pressured on this one, you know. She's a little crazy. The things she wants to see are a couple of the cases where Trump has been slightly less irresponsible than he might otherwise have been. But on the other hand, the fact that he is selling out to all the big donors is also an empirically true fact. So, yeah, we need a better expression. I don't want to hand anything to her much, but, you know, if she says a true thing, it's a true thing, right? Truth is truth, regardless of who says it. So we're allowed to say that she's saying the truth. And I think we're allowed to say, honestly, that it doesn't, it's good that the MAGA coalition is coming apart a little bit.
I love that. I'm a little cross-pressured on Marjorie Taylor Greene wanting Trump to be, you know, more anti-Israel and also being in the pockets of the rich people. Here's the thing. Trump is vulnerable on that, which she just laid out. And is that because there is some part of the MAGA base that's anti-Semitic, of course? Is it also because it is true that he has said that he was going to be America first? And this was another clip that I didn't play where she said, I don't identify as MAGA anymore. I'm America first. Because see, MAGA isn't America first. I think that's a useful frame for people to attack him from all parts of,
yeah, I agree with that.
You know, no matter what your ideology is, if you're Jewish space lasers or if you're just a normie neoliberal, like, he hasn't been America first. And he has been corrupt, and he's given handouts to the big tech guys. He's given handouts to his crypto buddies, and he hasn't like gone after the established interest groups like he said he was going to. And instead, he's building a big fancy ballroom for himself. You know, there's a lot of crazy in there. I think that going after him on the vaccine is not what I would choose to go after him on, but we should let 1,000 followers bloom. And I think that it's, that's the frame that Donald Trump has not been America first. He's not drained the swamp. He's been acting on behalf of himself, his own financial interests, and, you know, the big rich guys who he wants to love him. I think that's a good frame, and maybe other people can take a little bit of a different tack on the details than Marjorie did. How does that sound to Bill?
Yeah, reasonable. I think you make an interesting point about her distinction about between America first and MAGA. I mean, essentially, she wants to be America first, and I take it whatever she thinks. I mean, that's, she sort of sincerely thinks that's what she's thinking, you know. But I think it's a vulnerability, right? Because America first, I mean, much as I deplore it and think its historical associations are very bad and so forth, has a certain resonance probably out there. It seems like commonsensical in a certain way, America first. And MAGA has now accumulated so much stuff that I wonder it's an interesting test. I haven't really seen that done recently. How that term is doing. I kind of think Trump loves it. He talks about it all the time. It's, you know, on his stupid, you know, Make America Great. I mean, it's everywhere, right? But I wonder how that slogan is really faring politically.
Something to think about. All right, last thing. Ted Cruz. When you go back in history, one of the things that I'm sure people could find it if they want to, go ahead and search for it, because I'm not ashamed. I don't love it. It's not something I feel great about when I look back on, but there was a brief moment of maybe 2 months where I was unofficially part of the Cruz crew in 2016, because it was the only way to stop Donald Trump. And I stand by that. I think that we would have been in a much better place if Ted Cruz had been the nominee than Donald Trump, mostly because Hillary probably would have won. But even if Ted Cruz had become president, we'd have been in a better place. There's nobody storming the Capitol waving Ted Cruz flags. Okay. That was just where we were at. Ever since then, I've found Ted Cruz to just be utterly disgusting and deplorable inside and out in every basically utterance that he's made. And then in the last couple weeks, Ted Cruz is going after Tucker really hard. Ted Cruz is plotting a 2028 to go after J.D. Vance. He doesn't like, you know, the way that they have basically taken this kind of MAGA nationalism, and he does not think it's representative of where the country should be. Tucker and Don Jr. were in Qatar over the weekend, sucking up to the Qataris, who are like giving us this plane, and there's this all this corruption, and obviously they're going after Israel, etc. And Ted Cruz quote tweets the Tucker panel in Qatar with, "I thought fellatio was illegal in Qatar." and I'm sorry to say Ted Cruz did a good tweet. And could we find ourselves in a situation where it is Ted Cruz that is holding the mantle in a fight in 2027 against J.D. Vance and the Trump family and Tucker Carlson? And are you ready for that? Are you ready for liking some of Ted Cruz's tweets again, I guess is my question.
Yeah, I guess so. It's funny. Was it 2 months that we were off for the Cruz Fiorina ticket? I'd be, in my own mind, rewritten that as 2 weeks or maybe 2 days. You know, it's like, I'm sure it really was 2 months, but I've compressed that.
I think it was 2 months.
I've compressed that in my own account of history there. So. But he was so horrible for the next few years. But, I mean, he does believe in certain things, and he's not an idiot, and he knows that some of these policies are very destructive, tariffs being one of them, I assume. He was always a kind of free trade
guy. Going after NATO. It's not all about Israel.
Yeah, just like the NATO
this
stuff.
View no, that we should like get rid of all of our allies and coddle up to the dictators. He's not for that. Like, he's not for the coddling up to Putin and, you know. So that's not nothing.
Some of the nativism has got to put him off. I mean, I would think, you know.
He's got some daughters that are libs. The daughters are libs.
Yes, that's a good sign.
And that matters. That matters. JD's kids are still young, and so he doesn't have the guilt yet. He's going to convince himself that his kids aren't going to hate him. That's going to come back to bite him in a few years, I suspect. Maybe not. Maybe he'll end up with children like Nayland Haley, who's Haley's son, who is like a MAGA nationalist for some reason. But I suspect a lot of these guys, and you see that with Marjorie. I think one connection between Marjorie and Cruz is they have to have Thanksgiving dinner with their late teen, early 20s daughters. And that demo, college-educated, late teen, early 20s women, are very, very, very unhappy with the current Republican Party, and maybe that nudges them a little bit. And okay, I'm not saying I'm going to be like, you know, putting a Ted Cruz yard sign up, but someone will have to carry the flag against the MAGA nationalists. And maybe it'll be Ted Cruz again.
We've ended up. You have to.
We'll leave it there.
Tim Miller, got to give it to Ted Cruz. Reminisces fondly about his days in the Cruz Fiorina, you know, super PAC or whatever you
Cruz crew.
Oh, my God.
Come on to the podcast, Ted. We'd have a good time. Anyway, that's Bill Kristol. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of the show if you guys can stomach it. We'll see y'all then. Peace.
For with all neons burning bright, pretty lights, red and blue, but this shut down all the honky tonks tonight. I say a prayer to heaven only knew. Used to say the highway was your home, but we both know that ain't true. It's just the only place a man can go. He don't know where he's traveling to. Colorado's always clean and healing, and Tennessee in spring's green and cool. It never really was your kind of town, but you went around with the Fort Worth blues. Skies wide and the clouds are few. A man can see his way clear to the light. I just hold on tight. That's all you gotta do. They say Texas weather's always changing. One thing change will bring you something new. And Houston really ain't that bad a town, so you hang around with the Fort Worth blues.
The Bulwark Podcast is produced by Katie Cooper with audio engineering and editing by Jason Brown.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Lost Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.